Hello and welcome everyone to Scotland's Rural College podcast discussion series here at the 2019 Royal Highland Show, taking a fresh look at some of the issues facing modern agriculture and offering the chance for you, the public, to put questions to our expert panellists. I'm Sian Hickson, and our episode today explores the experience of women in agriculture and the wider rural sector. Joining me today are Heather Anderson, June Geyer and Sally Williams. Heather Anderson is co-owner of Whitmore Organics, an innovative organic farm and produce vendor in the Borders focused on reconnecting people with where their food comes from. She's also a Scottish National Party councillor and representative for Tweeddale West. Along with a broad emphasis on social justice and rural affairs, Heather's work includes involvement in the development of the Good Food Nation Bill. June is chair of Women in Agriculture, an industry-created Women in Agriculture group formed in 2015. She is an active director of the family engineering business, Gaia Plant Services, serving the agricultural and related industries and involved with the family's suckler cow and arable farm. She's also currently a chair of the Scottish Association of Young Farmers Club's Willie Davidson Trust, was for 7 years a Royal Highland Show Society director, and has also been chair of the Central and West Fife Agricultural Society. Sally Williams is director of the Oxford Farming Conference and a previous chair of the Scottish Association of Young Farmers. She farms with her parents and sister on a dairy and sheep farm in southeast Scotland and is a specialist in precision farming methods, with her pedigree Holstein herd being milked by 6 robotic units. She's a passionate advocate for educating consumers about food and farming and is a volunteer farmer for the Royal Highland Education Trust. Thank you very much for being here, all of you. So let's begin with a basic question. Is there a gender balance problem in farming?
Well, this is June Geyer speaking. I don't believe there's a complete gender balance. I believe there are a lot of women involved in farming who are quite happy not to be the front focus. They're quite happy to just support the rest of the family. Some are very active through without even knowing it, you know, they've inherited the farm and they've had to take on dad's farm or the family farm for some reason. So I don't think it is such a big issue, no.
I think it's a really significant issue. I'm Heather Anderson. I'm new to farming. I've only been farming organically for 20 years. And so I came into this from Dundee and have been continuously shocked by the culture. The average age of a farmer in Scotland is 58. The sex of all the representatives on the National Farmers Union of Scotland board is male. It's absolutely shocking when the Scottish Government are trying to work towards 50-50 gender balance. We've got a major national organisation with no women. So there are some amazing women in farming in Scotland, and what we have to do is help them get to the front. And I think it's not just a sort of... If it was any other organisation, it would be called institutional sexism, right? But we're being polite. So I don't even think it is that conscious. I think there's a generational element to it where there's a bunch of older farmers who are the majority of farmers who've done things in a certain way and they haven't been pushed, encouraged, cajoled or forced to change. And actually the whole industry could be so much more vibrant if we let all the amazing women in there get to the front.
Sally.
I don't think there's a gender balance problem. It's kind of halfway. It's not like me to sit on the fence, but it's halfway between Heather and June's answers, actually. Women are there. There are a huge number of women involved in agriculture, and not just playing supporting roles, but it's where I will make my very sexist comment. We're the ones that are actually getting on with the work. It doesn't interest women that much to be the ones... We don't need to be standing up and seen on podiums because we're actually very comfortable with getting on and getting the jobs done behind closed doors. Where it then causes us a problem is people forget we're there, mm-hmm. that we know all about agriculture, that we are not just... the supporters. And the classic example, and I've already spoken to the panel about it this morning, was actually last night at a dinner, somebody talking about a conference and said to me, "Oh, Sally, you would absolutely love it. The women get bussed into town to spend the day shopping and then join the men in the evening for the dinner after the conference is over and the business part of the day is done." So that is something, yes, that's where the imbalance actually happens. It is the attitude, but the women are there. There isn't as big an imbalance as people believe.
Yeah. But the women may be there and they're amazing, and I know many of them, but women and young girls need role models. And that whole thing about seeing women making decisions, being in charge of farms, making policy, speaking up, all of that helps the younger people be confident and follow a role model. And we've got a generational problem. Farmers are old. We need young people to come in, and we need everybody, including young women, to think it's a job that they would want to do.
I agree with you, but I think then it's also down to the women to be those role models. So I have two young daughters, and my attitude is if I get out there and I am everything I can possibly be and I push at all the boundaries and I just keep doing and reach, maximise my own potential and achieve what I can potentially achieve, then my girls grow up thinking that there isn't a problem. And actually then, to be very glib, in one generation, you've nailed it. If you bring up the next generation to think there isn't a problem, there won't be one. My mum is farming, so I grew up not really thinking there was a problem. Now, is that why then I have the confidence to stand up and become National Chairman of Young Farmers back in the day? Why I then feel very comfortable and competent with going down to Oxford and being a director of the Oxford Farming Conference? Probably because I did have that role model. So that is actually, it's down to the women then to stand up and be counted and get in the room and lead that, and you've got the problem sorted.
And you know, when I think about it, I was only 20 years old when I represented young farmers on our local agricultural show society, and I was the only young farmer that was ever invited to come to all the meetings thereafter, and I've been on that blinking show committee for goodness knows how long. I then became secretary and the first ever female chairman, and it's possibly the oldest show in Scotland, if not Britain. It was formed in 1760. Now, I only stayed on because they recognised that I was useful. It's not that they excluded anybody, and I've encouraged other women to come forward and help, and there's a stage that they get to and that's as far as they want to do. And they're much more capable and practical and more house proud and better at books than I am, but not everybody wants to do it, unfortunately. And through Women in Agriculture, I've now discovered that it's all about confidence, because you're right, some people do want to go further. They go to a meeting, respected agricultural local meetings, and they feel excluded, ostracised, because they might be the only woman that turns up through a sea of men, and they just feel pretty uncomfortable. And if they haven't got enough confidence, they'll not go back again. But can I tell you that I was invited on a panel at our Perth Agricultural Discussion Society, three women, one from their nephew, one a sheep farmer, one myself, taken for high tea, told, "Look, lass, only 20 people turn up, maybe only 10. 64 people turned up to our meeting, and I've gone to everyone since, loved going to it, and now they've got a lot more women, and they hadn't any women on their mailing list." So we just need to get out there and say, you know what, we want to be included, and bang the drum and just have a bit more confidence. We need to give more confidence to inspire them, because I know that they will do it if they try.
But what we're hearing here is there are really capable women, there are women doing amazing jobs, but we've still got 100% male representation on the major farming union. So is that because none of us really want to put ourselves forward and
I
do that?
I think so.
Well, in every other profession or trade, like you're in engineering,
yeah.
Women are on boards.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not just that all of the women who happen to be in farming are uninterested in policy development. There's something deeper going on.
Possibly.
And so we need to encourage women to overcome that and support them to take up those roles.
Without just attacking the union, though, maybe the problem is the union and not agriculture. If you look at SAYFC, again, it is a young lady who is the national chairman of SAYFC. There are plenty other committees and boards where women are there. And I think sometimes we maybe get not necessarily too hung up, but focused on the fact that the union is male. To go back to June's point earlier about women going into meetings and not feeling comfortable because you're the only woman, there are plenty of young people who go into those exact same meetings and don't feel comfortable and never ever go back again. And I think sometimes we can get too hung up on the fact that it's because of our gender rather than just we're slightly different. And I think any meeting you go into, even the number of men I speak to who suffer from imposter syndrome, who walk into a meeting and think, I don't belong here, I'm not clever enough, or I don't know enough, or I'm not brave enough to speak, or I'm not eloquent enough when I do speak. And it's actually, it's looking at people and thinking about people rather than getting too hung up on the gender thing. And I totally take Heather's point on the union. And actually, if we do believe in the union and we want it to genuinely represent agriculture, they are our fastest link into the government. So we maybe should be fighting more to have them more relevant. They do say, oh, well, then women, you've just got to stand up, get in the room and be counted. But actually what they forget is there is so many other things going on in women's life. And it's not that men don't have anything to do with bringing up children, but invariably it is the women that have to think about it, that are the ones that have to be home at night to get the tea done and sort it out. I'm very lucky. My husband is an equal partner with me. He deals with more dirty nappies than I ever have, and hopefully will continue doing that. But it still comes back to we have to fight. You just have to keep knocking on that door. I'm a real strong believer in meritocracy. There are plenty of men who are in positions not on merit, I have to admit. But for women to get there, we just have to make sure that we do it sensibly rather than, oh, well, great, you're a woman and you tick the box, so let's fire you in there. Because then the whole thing, you'll not be taken seriously and the respect element will just die.
Thank you very much for that. So this week, Christina McKelvey, the Minister for Older People and Equalities, announced three programmes to support women in farming, recognising that as well as being key contributors to the rural economy, women can face these particular challenges in the sector, including geographical isolation, caring responsibilities and lack of connection with services. So, Heather, as a farmer and a politician, what are your thoughts?
I really welcome the programmes. I think we have to do everything we can to say that women are welcome, women are being encouraged to engage and support it. Women are very good at diversification. They're very good at collaboration. I think part of the issues with it, I'm from the outside, so I'm from Dundee. So I'm coming in with fresh eyes, looking at an industry, thinking this is weird because this must be the only industry in the world where you only get to be a farmer if your dad was a farmer. You know, you can be a hairdresser without your mum being a hairdresser. You could be a lawyer without your dad being a lawyer. Whereas in farming, we've still got this very deep thing that the farm is passed on to the sons. It's the son who is assumed will take over the farm, and that trickles through the whole of the industry. And we have to do something about succession to make sure young women can get access to land and take over farms themselves.
June, I believe you had something earlier about farms. It's being assumed that farms pass to the sons.
Well, not necessarily. I do know that farms aren't always passed to the sons. Sadly, if someone's had a tragic accident or died, the wife or a woman is quite often the one to pick up the pieces. And what I was saying earlier before our interview was that I've heard stories where, unfortunately, wills haven't been in place, and so the whole farm has been mothballed until things have been sorted out. And maybe sons have had to start up new credit ratings and things just to go forward. I also heard of one very sad story where a tenant farmer had a tragic accident and was in a life support machine, and his wife had phoned for help and said, look, the rent's due next week, and he was the sole signatory on the cheque. I don't know what to do. So it's not always passed on to the sons. Sometimes the kids don't want to carry on with it. But what isn't sorted out in many cases is the succession plan. They need to think of the succession plan. They need to have wills in place. They need powers of attorney. A lot of these little nuts and bolts have been overlooked, and women, I've discovered, have come to some of our meetings and heard these things and taken permission to go home and discuss it so that these things are in place.
In the course of your various careers, I was wondering if you'd faced any particular barriers or blocks as a result of your gender.
I'm not somebody who really pays much attention to barriers or blocks, and I tend to just bash on through them. But of course you do. But as a young person, you will. If you went into the legal profession as a woman trying to rise up through the ranks, you will face just as much discrimination as you do within agriculture. And it is about just keeping going. You will get the comments. I mean, I've shared it publicly with on many occasions. The tanker driver, I'm a dairy farmer, and the tanker driver saying to me one night, "Oh, your dad must be absolutely devastated not to have had a son." Well, it's 10 o'clock at night and I'm in the dairy, so I don't really think it makes much difference, my gender. And I said, "Well, I'm here." And he said, "Yes, but the family name, you know, you're going to lose the family name." And it's fascinating because, again, as a dairy farmer, all of my cows take the mother's name, and that is the one name that survives on through. The father's name is actually irrelevant. It's the mother's name. So it fascinates me that we have this absolute obsession as humans about this whole genealogy, and it's the male line. But just to go back to the previous point about the programmes launched by the political establishment, and I think any programme that is going to support leadership and development and confidence of anybody, it doesn't matter if it's women, and if it takes a woman, I can be fairly critical of the women in agriculture movement, but actually in terms of the programmes, if that's what it takes for women to feel comfortable and to then build their confidence to go out and become rural leaders, then they're absolutely brilliant. I took part in the Rural Leadership Programme. It's a Scottish Enterprise programme, and I cannot recommend it highly enough because it gave you so much confidence and self-belief that actually all of the insults and the nonsense that can get flung at you, you really do learn to just, well, water off a duck's back. Is it affecting my profitability? No, it is not. So I'm just going to keep going. Thank you very much. So in terms of the programmes, I've had to admit I was wrong, and I actually think these programmes are really, really important. And as long as women then go out and don't just get caught in that women bubble, that you do have to go out and get in the room with everybody, with everyone, all the movers and shakers within the industry. It's not enough to just think, oh, well, I've risen in women in agriculture, I'm respected in women in agriculture. You do have to go out and keep engaging and keep building your own profile to actually take the whole thing forwards.
One of the issues, though, about gender discrimination is, like all types of discrimination, we carry an element of it within ourselves. So I'm much older than you, Sally, right? So in my generation, when you left university, you thought you'd be a secretary because that was the job, right? And so I'm spent a long, long time in my life deferring to men, and it's taken me till later in life to say, no, actually, I'm going to stand for that. I'm going to do that. So it's that confidence to think you can do it, and it has taken my generation a lot longer than it's hopefully going to take your, and your daughters probably won't even think there's an issue. They'll just breeze on ahead. So it's tied in with the generational issue with farming, that we need to get young people in, and young, both men and women, into farming to reinvigorate the whole profession.
But I wonder if all these things have changed, because if we all think back, well, not that we can remember World War II, but if you look back at the history of World War II, was it not the Land Army girls that took on the farm? So is it maybe the case that when the men came back from war, it changed again?
Yeah. Yeah, they all were told to stop farming because the men were back in charge.
Okay, so and then they had lumber jills as well. So women have been very forceful and very active in farming for a very long time. So
it's not about ability or knowledge or skill. It's about assumed role. That's what we're talking about here.
Ah, right, okay.
Yeah. But it still comes from within, because I agree, I mean, the hair shirt that everyone carries, but it's then with the use of these programs and other things, then if you have that confidence, you stop deferring. You don't think, oh, I'm just a wee woman, so
and if
I
you
don't
have
know.
The role models,
exactly. So it is, but that's where I think it's a two-way, and the women have to drive it. We can't you can't sit back and think, oh, well, somebody please help me, because that's fundamentally part of the problem in the first place, is actually you can't say that. And you know, apologies, because this is a podcast and people can't see the audience in front of us, but just a show of hands, you know, how many of the younger women actually do think there's a major, major problem, or do you think it's a generational thing and for the younger ones coming on through, we're dealing with it head on?
Major problem? Yep.
There's a few hands up.
That's interesting.
There's a few hands up.
Anyway, sorry.
I think it's the...
We're just talking amongst ourselves.
We're talking a lot about kind of forcing our way into the room, but the fact is the doors of that room are already wide open and the red carpet rolled out for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why representation is so important. But I was going to ask, what parts do you think that legislation could usefully play, if any, in enacting these changes?
Well, I think it sends a really strong signal from, you know, if the Scottish Government are basically pushing for 50-50 gender balance by 2020, they should be saying to boards, we're expecting you to follow suit. And they can't just carry on dealing with boards that aren't making active steps or don't have a plan for changing the gender balance. Mm-hmm. I just think it's gone on too long. A lot of these announcements are 10 years old, you know, and it still hasn't changed.
Yeah.
I'm obviously a young optimist. I'm not a fan of legislation in this situation at all. I think if you actually look at businesses that are successful and moving forwards, they are the ones who have the balance, who are already looking at things and are moving forward. So I always glibly say the dinosaurs are dead for a reason, and the dinosaurs will die out. It just takes time. You can't expect it to change overnight. Yeah, legislation, I'm dead against it. The idea that you put women on a board just because they're a woman, you're going to damage that board. And I know that's not necessarily your point, Heather. It has to be done on merit. Mm-hmm. But you will end up in a situation where there's a panic of, oh, my God, we don't have enough women. Do you know Bessie next door? Do you think she'll do it? Grand, let's get her on there.
But so that's not the evidence of just filling spaces with women that happen to be next door. What it's about is a board's culture saying, when we next have our elections, we should be paying attention to who we are encouraging to apply. So it's not saying, can useless women apply because we've got a woman's vacancy? It's about them actually being open and looking to recruit people with ability, like you, somebody coming to you saying, why don't you consider standing? It's a slight bit of encouragement, right?
Yeah, that's fair enough. But yeah, I totally agree. But I think the legislation is a step too far. And then I'll use Oxford Farming Conference as an example. Every year we take on three new directors, and last year, two out of the three were women. And that's without legislation. That is an awareness and a driving forward that actually, in order to represent society and be reflective of society, you have to have women on board. Because our consumers, as in agriculture, our consumers are predominantly women. Yep. And the idea that the boards and the machinations behind the scenes are all directed by men, we're not going to get our target audience right. We're not going to actually meet the needs of our consumers. So I come back to the point that as a business, if you want to survive, you're actually going to have to take these points on board regardless.
June, what are your thoughts?
I'm sitting on the fence about the legislation, but I do agree with Heather that you should go out and invite and encourage the right ladies to come forward, definitely.
So to the provocative question, has the women in agriculture movement, quote unquote, gone too far and created a divide between male and female farmers? Is the supposed push towards encouraging a female voice in the industry rocking the boat?
I don't think they've gone far. I honestly don't think. We started in 2015, and that's not our aim at all. I think what it has done is it's raised awareness and made people talk about it. And just as Sally said earlier, young people need to be thought about as well. Yeah. Don't keep it as an old boys' club. Keep it fresh, keep it stirred, keep the right people coming in all the time. Yeah. Don't be discriminatory about it.
And as you can imagine, I don't think we've gone far at all. So I think it's quite shocking that it has to exist as an organisation in this year, you know, but it does, because there's still an issue to address. This isn't about excluding people. This is about encouraging women who are 50-odd% the population to take up their place and play their part and help this industry survive. We're about to be faced with Brexit. We need every person's ability, imagination and capacity to make agriculture relevant to the whole of our communities, and women are great at that. We do food every day.
I think they have to be very, very careful. I admire the passion of both June and of Heather, but anything that excludes based on gender is the opposite to what we're trying to avoid. You know, we're complaining about women in ag not being respected and taken seriously, and that the NFUS is effectively men in ag. And so our reaction, instead of getting in and getting onto these boards is to create a women in ag movement. Now, I'm not as critical as that probably now sounds, but you do. We have to be very, very careful. I have spoken to a lot of men who are now very nervous about the women in ag movement. There is a joke that as a man, you can attend women in ag meetings and conferences if you are enlightened. And I find that, yes, it's very funny and it's tongue-in-cheek, but actually it is excluding, it is actually by sheer dint, it is excluding the other 50% of the population. If it helps women have the confidence to then actually take themselves, have more self-belief and apply for directorships or to instead of leading from behind, lead from the front, brilliant. But you have to make sure that you don't just stop, that you don't go, great, I've been to that conference, I've been to Women in Ag, I'm well known now within the Women in Ag movement. You have to take that out wider. You have to get in every room going rather than just allowing it to stop there. So there are times that it is very exclusive, that it does make men feel very uncomfortable. So I think it's just you have to be very, very, very careful.
But you also have to have a theory of change. So we've been through lots and lots of social change. It wasn't acceptable for people to be gay. In fact, it was criminalised, right? So you have to think we have got a situation at the moment where there is a problem. We have to make change happen. Hopefully, we won't have a women in agriculture organisation, mm-hmm. right? Because it'll have done its job and it'll just be people in food and agriculture, right? But we're not there yet. So we need a vehicle to encourage all the folk who are being put off or intimidated or not welcomed to say you are welcome, please come forward and play your part.
Yeah. I agree, and that's the thing with women in ag is it is diverse voices and diverse opinions, because there are people within women in ag though who do not want it to ever end and who do not think that the measure of success would it be ending. I totally agree, the measure of success of women in ag is when it does not exist anymore, and that would be absolutely wonderful if we are in the situation where women do feel comfortable walking in and it's not an issue. But there are those within it, though, who it's a movement they want to see continue forever and a day. And that's where we have to be very, very careful.
Do you know that there is a Women in Engineering Association? And the Women in Engineering Association was started in the 1930s. It's still going, so you never know, we
might
still be going.
Are you the secretary to that
no,
as well?
No, absolutely not. But when I Googled Women in Agriculture, I misspelt it or something, up put Women in Engineering. And possibly there are other women's things. It's not meant to be that it's excluding men or whatever. It's like there's Women of Scotland Business Lunch, women. There's lots of women's things. I'm in a women's curling club. It's called Ladies Curling Club. There is men and women's thing, but of course if NFU want to get more women, look at Minette Batters. Yeah. She is national president of NFU England and Wales, an amazing figurehead if you like, and she only joined the NFU in the last 10 years I think, just by accident, because she wanted to explore more about beef. If a woman wants to get on with something, she will get on with it and do it. I just think at the moment they're quite happy with their lot, really. They don't realise the skills that they have.
I suppose we could say, we can wait for the dinosaurs to die out, or we could be the meteor that ends them. But just before I move on, we move on to the questions in the audience section, I've got one final question for all of you, which is, what is something you wish you'd known at the start of your career as a woman in farming?
I think the whole thing about farming is it's exhausting. It's very difficult to make a living. It's a long, hard road. So it's probably better that you don't know that. I think going into farming with complete optimism and a lack of knowledge is extremely helpful, or you wouldn't start. Not knowing much helps.
Thank you, Heather. Sally, any thoughts?
I used to get myself all worked up about what other people thought, and when I went to meetings and said something, I would then come home and play over and over in my head, did that sound right? Did I sound like a complete idiot? Do people now respect me for what I've said? And actually none of that matters. It's all about your own confidence and self-belief and what comes from within. And it's all very philosophical and a bit touchy-feely, and apologies. But it's as long as you are true to yourself and do what you believe in, who gives a monkey's what anybody else thinks about you? As long as at the end of the day you can square with your own conscience that you've done what you think is right, then the rest does not matter.
And I also think that maybe that's why it is a generation thing, farming, because you're born into it, you understand that there's going to be problems. You don't really think about it because it's all you've ever known. It is a lifestyle. So, Heather, I applaud you if you've not been a farmer. If your parents weren't farmers, that's quite a big step for you to take, really. But I think for those of us that have been kind of born into it, you kind of understand there's highs and lows and all these different things.
Yeah. To our panellists, June Geyer, Sally Williams and Heather Anderson, thank you so much for a brilliant and enlightening discussion. If anybody has a question, please put your hand up and Ali will bring over the microphone.
Not very familiar with using these apparatus. I'm one of the dinosaurs, so I do often feel like an imposter sometimes, you know, and where I'm in at meetings, etc. But I represent Argyll in the Islands. We've had a very successful Women in Agriculture meeting nearly 2 years ago. We've not been able to have anything follow on from that. With difficulty getting, you know, people to take up representative roles within the region, no matter how hard we try, I think women have, you know, everybody's got a role to play. So, you know, how do we get that next step on? That's, you know, I'm scratching my head. I'm nearly at the stage I'm dying out. So, what would your suggestions be?
Do you want to?
Can I just answer that? Why is it 2 years since you last had an event?
We had floated an event last year. We were going to have an event taking women in agriculture from Argyll up to the Parliament, you know, the Scottish Parliament. That wasn't the only women. It was to be, you know, everybody could go, but it fell through lack of support. So now we're looking at basing another meeting within Argyll because, you know, Argyll is quite geographically challenged. So, you know, we want to take it forward.
Well,
but time is, you know, it's trying to fit into people's time.
Can I, our local NFU actually invited myself, my son and some other young people for supper one night to talk about the way to encourage more women and younger people to come along. And the younger people actually said they felt awkward coming to NFU meetings because they felt awkward asking questions. So again, it was a confidence thing. Mm-hmm. But at the next meeting, they opened it up and made it a completely different type of meeting. So I believe, I'd never been to one before, they have barbecues and various things, and out of that they're starting to need the people, if you like, and find out what they're needing and moving on. But the one young person had been to a local meeting and just found it so off-putting. But if you maybe keep including them and keep patting them on the back, maybe they will come. But you need to have another meeting, and that was 2 years ago. You need another one.
Would any of you ladies on stage
at the moment
be willing to travel to Argyll and participate in that?
Yeah, well, I would. I would, or if I didn't, I'd get somebody to come down. I don't know about the others.
And I think it's also there's a certain comfort zone in the types of meetings that have always been held, where everybody knows how to behave and everybody knows who everyone else is. And it's trying to remember what it's like coming the first time when you don't know who anybody is and you don't know what the code is for how you talk to another. So I think it's trying to organise a different type of meeting and maybe do some personal approaches to people to say, I think that thing about saying it'd be really good if you personally came, you know, so using your membership to find the people and invite them, that's probably more productive than trying to have a huge social event, you know.
It's very, very time consuming for you, and that's part of the problem, is that it is the personal connection. It's that classic in life, it's never what you know, it's always who you know, and making people feel comfortable and feel welcomed. Your meeting was a massive success 2 years ago. I read about it, and any everybody I spoke to that had been was raving about how good it had been. But in order to continue to encouraging people, it's the collaboration. Do joint meetings where women are going to be there already, so that it's not a brand new thing they're walking into, where they've got already somebody a connection where they yeah. know to make them feel comfortable. Because it's the same again, it's already been said that for the young people thing, that it doesn't matter, anything that's new for anybody yeah. is nerve-wracking. You know, it's walking into anything, even if it's the first time you've taken your child to the new nursery or the first time you start a new job, whatever, anything that is new for human nature is nerve-wracking, and if you can avoid it, you will. So to get over that barrier, it's the speaking to people. If your question is specifically for Argyll, then hopefully we've given you some ideas. But in terms of the union itself, I think the structure's wrong, that everybody is busy. It actually doesn't matter if you're male, female, young, old, whatever. Everybody is busy. And to see people rising through the ranks within the union, you are pretty much asking for at least a 10-year commitment of regular meetings, regular attendance, and building up and building up and building up. Now, does that mean the people at the top are then best qualified because they've come through the ranks and they really understand what's going on and they've got a good feel for the entire industry? Quite possibly. But without a shadow of a doubt, you are putting off so many people who genuinely do not have that level of time to give. And that's the other side for the Women in Ag thing, and it's why I think, why do we need to have the separate meetings? Is actually, if we have meetings that are relevant and that get people together and actually is of interest to people, it shouldn't need to be titled with a Women in Ag banner. It should be, is this relevant? Yes or no? Is it worth going to? Yes, I'm going to spend my time going to that. And that's part of the problem, is that it's very easy, and I'm not suggesting this is what you've done, it's very easy to just pay lip service to it and go, Women in Ag's really in at the moment, so let's get loads of people together. We can promote whatever we're promoting, and we'll stick the Women in Ag banner on it. We'll get hundreds of people through the door. Great. Marketing, fabulous. But it's just paying lip service to it. It's not actually making any fundamental difference. So it is about thinking, well, what is the message? Why are you wanting the Women in Ag involved? What is it you're trying to achieve, and what do the women actually want to achieve? The really good example is the Women in Dairy down in the southwest. Absolutely brilliant group. They're running training courses, they've got relevant meetings. There's men that go along to them as well, but it is actually, they've sat down and thought, what do women actually want in our region? What is going to encourage them to say, can somebody look after the kids tonight, or I'm going to take 2 hours off and go and do this? And they've absolutely nailed it. So I think there's probably a lot to be learned from them.
Yeah, and if you give a questionnaire out to ask them what their views are as well. But I thought you were maybe going to mention about your mailing list.
What mailing list?
That you got excluded.
Oh, sorry, yes. Oh, of course. Oh, yes. So, well, and this is also part of the problem, sorry. The union's membership package. So when you join the union, you're told it is your farm that is a member. Recently, one of the members of staff within the union has gone off on... And I'm sorry, this is turning into union bashing, and it's not meant to be that, because they do some good work. A member of staff went off on maternity leave, so I no longer receive emails. I flagged this up to the office, and I was told I will not receive emails until we change our membership to a family membership, because Dad is the head, so Dad is the one who will get the emails. For goodness sake, add my blooming email address to your database and send me these emails. It's not difficult, but no, that is impossible. So that really doesn't help the case.
Membership is hopefully going to address it. You've told us a slow burn. It's infuriating how slow it's burning.
It's just changing the database, yeah.
Yeah, well, GDPR.
But why even call it a family membership? It's not the family. I'm not a member because I'm the daughter. I'm running the dairy. I'm in the business. It is the business membership. Do not patronise me by saying, it's all right, if you're part of the family, we'll let you get the emails. It just has wound me up beyond belief.
You've wound her up now. Right?
And not all farmers' wives are women in agriculture. You know, not they don't all participate. Most of them do, but some don't. So,
yeah, just individual membership.
It's a very important point, June. Thank you. Do we have any more questions? I see one. Oh, if you wouldn't mind waiting to the microphone. Thank you.
It's really a question to June, but Sally might have views as well on, because your background in engineering.
Yes. No. I've married into a family that have an engineering business.
I'm giving you a lot of engineering now. No, it's a, I suppose, a more general question about, it always seems as if the way the culture of farming, in terms of things like health and safety, where it's such a dangerous industry, in terms of the expectation that you do things quickly and you're strong, and not saying women aren't strong or they can't do things quickly, but some of the culture of that.
Yeah.
I was really thinking how you think so the farms of the future might look if they were more less gendered in the way they're designed and conceived. That was all.
To do with like weights and lifting and all these types of things.
Yeah, all that, making them ergonomic, making them safe, yeah. Making them more, you know, and behind that, I suppose, this cultural thing about that, you know, hard work per se is valued. You know, heavy things are valued, and in some case, speed and danger are valued yeah. as things to be proud of rather than things to be a little bit concerned about.
Yes. That's something that's affected my side of the family tragically in the past, so I'm very mindful of things like that. But, you know, lots of farmers think they are supermen, and they're always lifting heavy things and doing strange things as well. I think the other side of my family were fishermen as well, and fishing and farming are two of the most dangerous, more dangerous than mining, apparently. But on our particular farm, we try and observe what we should be doing, but I don't see many farmers going around in high-vis jackets, safety hats and all the other things yet, but they are quite mindful of what they're doing because they're working in the engineering business as well.
I think it's a generational thing, and it comes back to the macho image of, you know, why would I do that safely, slowly and carefully if I can do it in half the time and I'm, you know, a big superhero. But I think, ironically, it's the insurance industry that is driving it. We not long ago had our insurance renewal, and part of that, we had to do a full health and safety audit. So it is definitely coming, it's definitely changing. And the women in agriculture thing, it is definitely changing as well, because I'll give the example of McDonald's. They do a Future Farmers programme. Last year, there was 9 places and all 9 are women. And I believe there are 14 places this year and 12 out of 14, I think. Don't quote me on that, but the majority are women. When we advertise for staff, the majority of people applying are women. Mm. So it is changing. Yes, the average age is said to be 58, and that statistic is used all the time. But that again, it almost comes back to my union bashing, and the head of the business is the 58-year-old man. But actually, the people on the ground that are coming up through the ranks, mm-hmm. there are so many women, and it is changing. And they're using the brawn over brains. We've got enough machinery now that in terms of your physical strength within agriculture, it's less and less important, simply because we've all got the machinery, we've got the technology to actually deal with it.
All right, I'm afraid we're going to have to wrap it up there, but thank you very much. Please join me in a round of applause for all our panellists today. Tomorrow at 11 a.m, we will be recording The Rise of the Machines, which is a podcast looking at technology and artificial intelligence in farming. We hope you can come back and join us then. Thank you very much from SRUC, and goodbye.